This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey guys, welcome to CarCast. Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea here. So Bill Goldberg is out today. He's dealing with some family stuff, but no problem. We'll get him back soon. I know he had a quick little stint out here to LA for WrestleMania, did a WrestleCon, and he likes to like fly in and then leave immediately. I didn't even get a chance to hang out with him, but we'll catch up with him again soon. But leading up to Grand Prix of Long Beach, I want to invite our old friend, not personally old, just a while, Graham Rahal, back to the show. How are you, Graham?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I am getting older, by the way. In a hurry, I feel like. So
we're all getting a little older. I just want to jump into this real quick. How you feeling? I watched the Texas race. A little bit of a crash going on there. I know you were bummed about it. We even heard you on the radio. Really no place to go.
Yeah.
I watched it, and when it happened, I saw the front end of your car lift, and I was like, oh, fuck. And then luckily that thing came down.
Me too.
Yeah.
I was telling somebody that it's so weird how that happens, but literally I had enough time to think about it. While when the front went up, all I thought about, I hadn't even told my wife this, but all that I thought about was my wife, my two girls, and I was like, just please get the nose down before the fence. You know, and it's weird in that moment because it's only, you know, a second or 2 seconds that you're kind of doing that. But a lot of things flash through your brain in a hurry. So actually, you know, it's incredible. You know, you have something like that, and here I am a few days later. No soreness, never was sore, never had any aches, any pains. The cars have just come so far from, you know, where they were at one point. I mean, the doctor called me the morning after, the IndyCar doctor, Dr. Visor, who's a stud. She's a rock star, as good as they get. And she said, hey, I just want to check on you. You know, everything good. You know, your hit was 98 G's. And I was like, holy shit. I mean, that's a lot, you know, but yet somehow, you know, you do that and you don't have any pain. So it's come a long way. We feel good. We're super disappointed about Texas, frankly, just not a good performance from us as an organization. But, you know, we are clearly in a stage where we're doing a lot of soul searching, and I think we'll be able to come out in good form. But we're excited for Long Beach for sure, man. I was thinking this morning, it's my 17th Long Beach.
Right.
Yeah. It's gone by in a hurry. Pretty crazy.
Yeah. I mean, we chatted, I think, a few times back when we were doing the Newman doc, when Adam Kroll and I were doing the Newman doc, and we were filming that in 2015, I think. We were mostly putting that together, and it seemed like not that long ago, going on eight years now since
goes
just
by
that
so
doc.
Fast. Yeah, it goes by so fast. And, you know, I remember those days well. Obviously, remember the Newman days extremely well. You know, special time in my life to spend time with him and be exposed. But yeah, I mean, racing years they're tough years, frankly. I mean, they wear on you, but they go by fast too. And, you know, to think we're about to hit the really kind of busy point in the NTT IndyCar series with startup here, right after Easter with Long Beach. And then, that's race number three in the year, but then we pretty much go from then till, I mean, certainly through May is almost every weekend. June is almost every weekend. July, you have three races. So, it's going to be a blur from here on out.
Tell me about some of the changes that the team's been made. I've been reading about some staff changes, a little bit of overhauling back at RLL, and but also, you know, during the off season, I mean, finished up the new building. I know your dad super proud of that. And, and separate from the things that you're doing on your own, which we'll get into a little bit, but
yeah,
the team itself has grown and it's making some changes, and
we are, you know, we're growing, things are changing, but you know, we're trying, we're, like I said, there's a lot of soul searching that goes on with that too. You know, when you bring in a lot of new people, there's a lot of different ideas. There's a lot of different ways to skin the cat. You got to start to work together to find, you know, what's going to be our way, what's going to be our identity as a team, and how are we going to do that? You know, it's just like in any other major sport, you take an all-star team and put them together. Rarely does it just click. Right. You know, I'm a big hockey fan, and like right now, you watch the Rangers, for instance, and there's no more talent on the face of the earth than there is in the Rangers. But the first few games, they kind of played terrible. You know, it took them a while to get things sorted out. It's how we are, I think. You know, we've got a lot of good people, but we've got to find a way to get everybody in a cohesive direction. You know, you look at St. Pete, we finished sixth. You know, Christian was ninth. Jack had a tough go. But, you know, the cars were better in the race. We were able to move forward. We were able to have a pretty competitive day. Obviously, Texas didn't go the way that we want it. But, you know, it's not the end of the world. You know, the season is still young. There's a lot that can be done and handled between now and Laguna Seca to finish the year off. So we'll see.
You know, as you said, the schedule is going to get real busy. Grand Prix of Long Beach is it's an interesting event because it, for us out here, you know, it's, you know, they start, I don't know, several months in advance of getting that track ready, getting that track built. It's not really a turnkey situation because you guys are running around in the streets out there.
Yeah.
And they turn it into a week long event. There's drifting that happens. And then, the vintage race out there, they get sports cars out there. And then after you guys run on Sunday, they bring out the trophy trucks on the asphalt, which, by the way, I don't know if you ever get a chance to even watch it because you're just finishing an IndyCar race, but
I watch a little bit.
It's a trip to watch.
No, I know. Those guys, it is a riot to watch them. I always, and Robbie Gordon always, he got really pissed at me a few years ago because I said this, but, you know, it's a great show. They just beat the, you know what, out of the track. And so they used to run.
That's why
right
they run
before.
Last.
Yeah, they used to run right before us. And we'd go out and there's like curbs missing and grass all over the place. And not at Long Beach, but other places we race. It's like, okay, I get this is entertaining, but we need to find a better time for this. But yeah, I mean, they, you know, putting the ramps down and jumping through the streets. It's cool stuff. And Robbie's done a great job building a series that's got some sustainability there. I mean, it's good entertainment, you know, and people want to go out and do it and have some fun. But no, I mean, Long Beach is, it's as good as it gets, you know, when you look at the United States and you look at, you know, Grand Prix style racing, the Long Beach Grand Prix is, you know, the longest standing best street course that there is. And I would also just say that it has the best group behind it. I mean, Jim McKaylee and the promoter, he's done it for probably the whole time, pretty much. But he's the man. I mean, he knows how to put on a good show and knows it's like clockwork now. I mean, that's the thing when you go to other new street course races or when we do, people always, they want to talk about all the bad stuff. So Long Beach wasn't built in a day, right? Just like Rome. Right. It's not built in a day. Right. It takes time. And, you know, here you are, what, year 45 or maybe more now of the Long Beach Grand Prix. And it's as good as it gets.
Do the other cars that go out there, we ask this question a lot when it comes to the Grand Prix of Long Beach, because they used to do the celebrity races. They did it for a long time. I don't know, like 40 years or something. And Goldberg's participated in it. Adam Kroll has participated in it several times. Funny story with Goldberg. He got so frustrated during one of the races. I think somebody, I forgot who it was. I think it was Dara Torres, the Olympian. She's the same one that crashed Adam off the race. I think years ago, she wrecked Goldberg, and Goldberg got out of the car and he was mad, and he hits like the driver's side mirror, and it breaks off the car, and he goes in, and then he didn't tell anybody later. Here we are years later. We can tell the story. He walks in, and I forgot who was there, for his wife or his manager. And she's like, "Oh, I'm sorry about the accident." He's like, I'm pretty sure I just broke my hand. Because smacking that thing off, he broke his hand. He breaks a lot
That's
of things.
Crazy.
He broke his hand doing it. But the question was, all the week-long races, especially the drifting ahead of time, does it screw up the track for you guys, or does it kind of make it
The drifting does a little bit. But I mean, I get it. In Southern California, the drift scene is really, really big too, you know. But yeah, the drifting does a little bit because it puts a layer of rubber on the track that is, for some reason, for us, is like ice. And it also creates a marbly area of the tire rubber that never really gets cleaned up. And so if you get offline, which I've had it a couple years ago, I crashed in turn 9 and in practice. But then I know Colton Herta crashed last year, I think in turn 9, or maybe it was the year before. You get just a hair offline, it's ice. And that mostly is the drift rubber for us. So it doesn't ruin the track. It's just different. And the way that you've got to be prepared for that and know what you're getting into. And it's also only for them is only in certain areas. Really, it's the last part of the track, turn 9, 10, 11 in the hairpin, is where you get, you know, all the drift rubber. So you've got to know that and be prepared for that as well. But, you know, typically on a weekend like Long Beach, when you have the sports cars, IMSA sports cars with us as well, that's a pretty compatible style of rubber.
Yeah.
So for us, it works well when you go race day, you know, nothing's changed too much.
I think we sat down with Tanner Faust at one point, and, you know, Adam's always picking his brain. He's like, hey, I'm doing the celebrity race. You know, what should I be aware of? He's like, well, now back when the schedule, I think, was different, I think they ran drifting the same weekend as the celebrity race.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're going right out there after the drift guys who are there in the morning. And on those cars, like the Scions and the Toyotas, whatever they were running.
Yeah.
I guess it sticks better to that rubber. So he was like, oh, in this corner, go flat out, because the drifters laid down rubber and you'll stick like glue. It's a little different.
It's probably more compatible. I would say it's also more like streetcar rubber, you know, typically. Yeah. Versus, you know, the way that the racing compounds are, but that's no big deal. I mean, like I said, it's part of the game. We're all used to it now, where we've all, you know, it's been the same formula, of events and everything else has been, on the docket at Long Beach for an extended period of time now. So, frankly, no major surprises there.
It seems like that track is sort of like attrition. It's kind of a process of elimination. The
big
hairpin
time.
Dive bombing, it's just like, if you can get through that track without hitting anything, you're probably gonna do really well in that race.
It's as hard as they come. That race is as hard as they come. It's a fast street course. It's bumpy, and it's kind of bumpy in the wrong areas. Frankly, it's you know, like into one is super bumpy. Into five, which is this right-hander that goes onto the back straight, is like, might as well be going over a ramp in an Indy car. Turn 8, they paved it, so it's smooth now, but it's so fast that there's no margin for error. Into 9, which is the end of the back straightaway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've all crashed there before, so that's part of it. But, you know, it's a challenging place. And nowadays it's harder because, you know, we race it at 10 tenths every lap. That wasn't always the case. Even early in my career, you would go out and it would become fuel strategy. And it was like, okay, everybody's lifting at the end of the pit wall on the front straight to save fuel. Everybody's got to do this and this. And you were kind of driving at 70, 80%. In my dad's era, there was probably even more. And he'll even fess up to this, that the cars weren't as reliable as they are today.
Yeah.
So in the races, you had to kind of take care of your equipment. Today, the cars run. So you drive the piss out of it for the whole race. I mean, you don't, you know, you drive hard, and the level of competition is so deep. I mean, you're legitimately, you're 20 cars deep every weekend that could win. And people think I'm nuts when I say that, but it's true. And so when one team, even a small team like Yunkos Racing, I mean, they were fast as hell at Texas. You know, Callum Ilott, who's one of their drivers, finished 5th at St. Pete, and Callum was next in line to be Ferrari Formula One driver, literally. and they went and hired Signs instead. And so Callum came over here, but the guy's top level talent. And so the depth of the field is so big that, I mean, it's as hard as it gets, you know, and so it's, that race is majorly challenging. It's very physical, mentally taxing, but it's always just a great place, a great vibe, a great environment to go, huge crowds, you know, good food in town. So it's kind of a fun place for many of us to go.
How do you like the road courses versus the ovals? Now take the fanfare out of it, right? Because that's a big part of it, right?
Yeah.
But just ovals versus road course.
Well, the fanfare side is that ovals, aside from Indy, ovals just don't bring the crowds anymore. And NASCAR's seeing that too. Ovals are a challenge. But a good car, a good race car on an oval is more fun than anything you could ever do on a road course. People think I'm nuts, I said, but like, if you look at like the Texas race last week, if you were Pato, or if you were Joseph, or if you were Palou, the guy, or even Felix before his accident, the guys that were really hooked up, just driving inside, outside, all over, you know how much fun that is? Like when it's on rails, on an oval, it's pretty well unbeatable. So, I mean, I love a good challenge like Road America, really fast corners and all that sort of stuff. You know, but the fun factor. Now, the flip side of that is if it's bad on an oval, you just want to go home. It's as bad as it gets. Whereas if it's bad on a road course, it's like, okay, we just got to get through the race and we'll move on and improve. On an oval, every lap, every corner, you're holding your breath. So a little bit different.
Okay. Then you add the fanfare back into it. You've got Indy 500. That's just, it grew into being the thing. But, you know, there is Grand Prix of Long Beach. There's some pretty prestigious events.
Yeah.
Like, you know, listen, look at the, I know you're super into cars like the rest of us. And you look at collector cars like we do. A collector racing car with, I would even argue if you go, hey, this is a championship IMSA car. And then you go, but it won Sebring or it won Le Mans. All of a sudden, it's worth 30% more money, right?
Yep.
Just because of those events. It's all the fanfare, the prestige of those events.
Yeah. I mean, nothing touches the 500 for us.
Yeah.
And I don't think for anybody really. I mean, I think the 500 still on a worldwide scale is viewed and respected internationally as being, you know, the biggest single day race in the world. Obviously, Le Mans is tremendous for those who have or haven't been, you know that. And if you haven't been, it's very cool to go check out. But, you know, from a fanfare perspective, you know, you're spot on. I mean, Long Beach is great.
Long Beach is a great big party and it's fun.
Road America is really good. You know, everybody's camping out. You drive around on the scooter or the golf cart on a Saturday night, you're going to laugh your tail off at all the idiotic stuff that you see going on. That's always a great time. You know, so they've done a really good job. The road courses definitely move the needle more on the fanfare side than what we've seen traditionally. But, you know, on the ovals, obviously at Iowa right now, which is not where everybody thinks of as being the best outside of Indy, the best race. Hy-Vee, which is one of our team sponsors, I mean, they've blown it out of the water with what they do there. I mean, the concerts, I mean, this year you have Ed Sheeran, Carrie Underwood, Kenny Chesney, and Zach Brown Band all on one weekend. So you have a doubleheader race weekend plus those four concerts before and after each race. You can't get any better than that.
Yeah,
so they're definitely
huge.
Moving the needle in that regard.
Aside from IndyCar, do you have your sights set on some other forms of racing?
I would love to go to Le Mans someday.
Yeah.
I would love to go to Le Mans someday. I think that would be tremendous. I'd love to win Sebring.
Yeah.
I've won Daytona. I'd love to win Daytona again overall. I would love to win Sebring. And if I could get to Le Mans and get a shot at that, it would be tremendous.
What would you like to drive at Le Mans? You, one of the prototypes, one of the LMP cars, or one of the sports cars, or what? Like,
from a fun side, of course, a prototype.
Yeah.
But you know me and I know me. And I mean, the BMW prototype we run in the United States, and there's no way in hell I'm going to fit in that thing. You know, I'm 6 foot three.
Yeah.
I mean, they just, these cars are getting back to being built so small inside, that, you know, the driver's your prototypical 5'6" to 5'9".
They're my height. They're like jockeys.
140, 150, 160 pounds maximum. And that's where sports car racing is tough for a guy like me versus IndyCar, is that an IndyCar, the car's built for me. The weight is adjusted for me. Whereas in a sports car, I was teammates with Elio one year in the Acura. I'm carrying around an extra 50 pounds. And on the track, you better believe 50 pounds makes a difference on the stopwatch, you know? So to match his times or to be as competitive was freaking hard. But yeah, they don't have an equivalency like that. So that is definitely more of a, you know, more of a challenge. But of course, the prototypes are what everybody wants to drive. You know, they're the top dog.
Interesting you say that. I was going to ask, because I was just thinking about it, like the drivers, so many of the drivers today are like jockeys. But I asked Tommy Kendall all the time too. It was like, Tommy, how come you're not, you know, going to Monterey with us and driving the vintage, whatever? And he's like, I don't fit in it. He's like, I'm already.
Well, it's a real thing.
Move it slowly.
Yeah, it's a real thing for us. It's we always, at the end of every text and everything that Tommy or email that Tommy and I send back and forth, we just put SDS, which means short drivers suck. And and you know, that's that, but it's real. I mean, there are definitely cars that I want to drive, and I've gone and I'm like, I'm sorry, man. Like, this isn't gonna work for me.
Yeah.
And in fact, from year one to year two of the Acura prototype program with Penske, I was supposed to stay. And I actually pulled out myself because I had a moment at Petit Le Mans in year one, and I went off, not bad, a little bit. Cost me maybe 4 or 5 seconds on one lap. But what happened was the car snapped loose. I couldn't correct it. I just hit my knee. You know, my legs were so high, I couldn't. So when you drive a car like that,
yeah,
you can't give your all. You know, you can't give everything, every ounce of what I've got to give. And so I ended up bailing out of that program. Then the next Petit Le Mans, I go back and drive again for him because Rossi went down to run the V8 supercar, and I go back to drive it. And they had moved the steering wheel up. They had made changes that they told me they couldn't. Otherwise, I would have never pulled my name out of the hat. But they made all these changes, and you know, it was better. But that's the thing, is you've got to make it so that it works, so that you can give your all. Otherwise, you're just a detraction, you know, from what, you know, what it can be capable of.
Yeah, right. Okay, so I know you're I appreciate you calling it in. I know you're on vacation, getting a little bit of between Texas and Long Beach. How's the family? Everybody's good.
Family's good. Yeah. Everybody's new good. Baby. Growing. Got a 7-month-old, 2-year-old who's right in here screaming. I can hear, character. But no, everything's good. Family's good. Courtney's good. No complaints.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask, but, are we going to see Courtney race anymore?
You know, I don't know. My gut says no. But it's ultimately going to be, you know, up to her on what she so decides to do. And, but I, you know, certainly right now, I know with the two kids and stuff, we both have our hands absolutely, you know, full. but, you know, it's really up to her and what she wants to do. You know, I know that the fire is still there for sure.
Right.
It just comes down to timing and everything else, for sure.
It's a big commitment to do it. This isn't, it's not like a hobby, like what you're talking about. Like, you know, this isn't, hey, we're going to go to two vintage races a year and have a little fun and pull something out of the collection. This is, it's a big commitment and risky and, you know, and it's a business. That's, people forget that there's a business involved.
For sure. And once you have, you know, and once you have the kids involved too in our lives, that becomes harder. But yeah, you know, for us, you know, without a doubt, we, you know, I think that the life that we lived prior to kids when both of us were racing, it was just purely travel. I mean, that's all we did.
Yeah.
Whether it was appearances, whether it was races, whether it was tests, whether it was back and forth to California to Indy, where, you know, we lived between the two places. And that's not a lifestyle you can live with kids. It's just not. It's,
yeah.
It's, you know, unless you got a private plane and everything else, which still it would be hell, but more cheap, more manageable. But, you know, for us, we'll see how it all plays out. I know, you know, for Courtney, it was the family part of that is so massive. You know, John obviously out there racing. So we'll just see how it all plays out.
Right. Okay. All right. So aside from racing, you got your hands into a bunch of different things. I'm going to rattle off a few things real quick, and then we can get into some of these things. We've got Graham Ray Hall Performance. We've got two Ducati dealers that I know of. We've got Ray Hall Paint Protection, which is pretty new, right?
Yeah.
The Graham and Courtney Ray Hall Foundation. You still have that going on. And then behind the scenes, you're building a new building. You're getting more involved with Bobby Rahal Automotive Group. I don't know if you've been buying into that more or starting your own or doing a bit of both, but I don't even know where to start. Graham Rahal Performance. Let's start there.
Yeah. So the performance shop's been great. I'd never anticipated that it would grow the way that it has. You know, I think really with all the specialty vehicles and everything else that we sell and have, available to us, it's that's been tremendous. You know, you name it, we do it. You want to rebuild it, we do it. You want performance upgrades,
but it started as a tuner shop, right? You're
it
doing
did, it did it did it started just like basic tuner stuff, you know, installing HRE wheels or
yeah,
sport spring setups or exhaust, you know. Now, I mean, now it's even gone as far as, you know, to where we are manufacturing our own products. I'm looking for a photo to show you, but like, you know, even yesterday, this is, I don't know if this will show up, but like a career, oh, probably won't because my Zoom,
yeah,
but anyway,
yeah, it comes up blurry.
Because, you know, like we're just manufactured a Career GT exhaust system. We're doing all these new center lock, you know, custom center locks on our recommission projects. So there's a lot of fabrication now that we didn't originally anticipate doing. So that's good. That's been busy. The Ducati stuff's just a lifelong passion. You know, and as a kid, dad always had whatever the freshest, shiniest new rattle was in the Ducati
yeah.
world. And their artwork, you know, to me, that's sex on wheels. It's about as good as it gets. And so, that's, you know, that's, I definitely enjoy that business. It's tougher in Indiana than say Southern California. I can tell you that, but we're making the most of it. I think we're doing a pretty good job there.
Oh, by the way, how cool is the Ducati bicycle?
Like, yeah, it's sweet.
That's
it's
cool.
Sweet.
That thing's rad, right?
On road and off road. The off road one, the TKO one, the RR limited edition is ridiculous. Like
yeah.
It is sweet. It is so cool. So that's, you know, we actually have several of those in stock. And again, in Indiana, they're not selling as good as I would have liked, but whatever, you know, they're badass bikes. So we're excited about that. And then, you know, the paint protection thing was just a company we acquired last year. That went through some tough times, and it was a great opportunity for us. We were doing a ton of business with them prior anyway, and it just made sense, you know, for us to acquire it. And so we did, and that's been huge. We're adding our second one of those in Cleveland, Ohio. So we'll have Indianapolis and Cleveland, Ohio, which will be great. And we'll see how it goes. And yeah, on the automotive dealership side, I've been buying in for sure. So I think I'm up to six stores that I have a part of, or seven maybe that I have a part of.
How many?
Which
how
is
many
cool.
Stores are part of the automotive group?
And we have 16 total franchises, or 19 franchises, 16 rooftops. I'd have to recount because we did add another Volvo dealership, and we're built another Lexus store out in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. So I'd have to maybe run back through that. But off the top of my head, that's
yeah.
where we're at. And so that's been a lot of fun for, you know, dad for the last 35 years. And now it's kind of time for me to step up and start to help.
It seems like your dad's plate is pretty full with the racing team, but I mean, we've talked so much about all the things that you're into. What does the day in the life of Bobby Ray Hall look like?
That guy doesn't stop ever.
Right? Yeah. And you know, we're doing the Ray Hall doc. One of the new films we're into is the Bobby Ray Hall doc and a Dan Gurney doc.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Dan, both of those are cool.
Yeah.
And dads, if you guys need stories, just
I'm sure. Yes. So now
it's not that I have them. It's that I know how to get them out of him. There's a lot of them there.
I think Adam sat down with Gurney a while ago, and I think we have the last filmed interview with him, which we used in other docs, but then we realized it would be better to use all of that footage now and use it in a doc.
Yeah.
But anyway, go ahead.
So
what does a day of Bobby Ray Hall look like?
Yeah. You know, I just think dad just doesn't stop. He just doesn't slow down. He tries to, but he's so addicted to this stuff and to working and to succeeding that, you know, I mean, he was at Texas, and then one day later, I heard he was up in Indy at the shop meeting with everybody. And then last night he was having an meeting with some folks in Indianapolis. I didn't even know he was there. I mean, this is only a day or two after the Texas race. And you'd think he'd go back and unwind where he lives in Florida. Yeah. Got out of Chicago just in the nick of time, it seems. But you know, for me, it's like, I don't, he just doesn't stop, and he's just not wired that way. And so, but we're lucky to have him, and, you know, he's doing well though. I mean, he's had just about every body component you could have replaced, and, back, knee, hip, whatever, heart. So he's in a better place now, and hopefully get another 100,000 miles out of him.
Yeah. Well, it's good. I'm looking forward to seeing him and all you guys in Long Beach, but wanted to see how we're doing, because we're excited about the doc. I think it's going to be a fun piece, and it has to have a little controversy, because that's what makes it exciting. And
for sure, there's plenty with
there's going to be plenty of that.
Yeah, I mean, with him and obviously the Andretti's in particular, that was always a known thing. You know, that's real. I think that the I don't want to use the word hatred, because that's not, I think there's a very high level of respect there, but the competitive nature between the two was always, or the three of them was always very, very high. You know, and that's a real thing for sure.
I was just out at Pomona this past weekend at NHRA and hanging out with some of friends over there, Ron Capps and the crew over at Elite Motorsports and stuff. And I always go to them and I go, you know, I always love about drag racing is the camaraderie among the teams, because it seems like everybody just wants to fuel the fire and just make drag racing better. And they, every one of them laughs at me and goes, yeah, there's some of that, but believe me, there's some competitiveness going on for sure.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, no, I get it. Of course there has to be, but It does look like, from the outside, at least everyone there seems to be pretty much on the same page when it comes to the public perception to grow that sport and keep that sport alive.
Yeah, and I think
that's an important part of sports, of racing, sports, of anything.
I think for them, that's they're in a pretty critical time too. You know, there's a lot of changes happening with combustion engine, as we all know.
And, yeah.
Drag racing wouldn't be the same without the noise. I think that's the reality. And so they're in a critical time of trying to keep their identity and push forward. And I do think they all do a great job of understanding that and understanding what's best for the entire sport and the organization and pushing the needle and pushing it forward for sure.
Well, like it or not, I would say that Tony Stewart getting involved does bring new fans over there just to see what he wants to do, what he's doing. I thought it was I like that he started with the alcohol cars and kind of took it from there. So we'll see where he goes with that.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? The biggest challenge that they have, and Tony does help this, but it's just aging team owners. If you look at, and drivers, if you look at the sport, the majority of them, at least in the top classes, cars are owned by either John, Kalita, Schumacher, which he's out, but still involved with Maynard or whatever.
But you know, to your point, Ron Capps went out on his own, started his own team. Antoine Brown just started his own team. He finally left, and those guys are kind of steering their own ship.
For sure. But they still, like, those guys are all, you know, they're all still based at Don Schumacher's shop. You know, there's still a lot of help, that support there.
Yeah.
That I'm not discounting them, because I think it's a brave move. And I told AB that before he did. I was like, brother, you just want to be a driver, you know, but I'm just saying there's a lot of change that's coming there, that needs to come there and is starting. So hopefully the next handful of years can create a lot of that and put them in a brighter spot as they go forward, for sure. But IndyCar is in the same position. I mean, you look, obviously you got, you know, Ganassi, Penske, Andretti owns a lot of the cars. But we're finally really starting to see Junkos, Hollinger, some smaller teams. I know there's a couple more coming for the 500 that are jumping in, that are new teams that are definitely capable. You look at McLaren. I mean, that was a pretty new team with Schmidt. Schmidt was always just a Indy Lights team in the early 2000s, mid-2000s, stepped up in a big, big way and have done a great job. Obviously, Shank is out there running around with a couple of cars. So, you know, there's a lot of new blood, young blood, which is good for the sport too.
Yeah. You know, as you mentioned, some of the older team owners that are out there, it kind of makes you wonder. Racing, almost all forms of racing, has always sort of been homegrown and family business, and we're seeing generations of it. I don't want to lose that, but at some point, do you see, I don't know, private equity coming in and going, hey, you know, listen, you're 75 years old. Do you want to keep running this team for a while? You know, what's the plan? And what if we buy it? And you know,
who knows?
Kind of sports franchise ish. You know,
yeah, that's definitely part of the play that is coming, that people are starting to see in our sport. But who knows what's going to happen in the future? I mean, as much as I wish everyone well, a PE firm buying a race team is probably would be their worst investment they've ever met or made. The old saying, you know, how do you make a small fortune in racing is you start with a big one, is still true.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's part of the game. You know, you get into it for the love of it. And I think that's what's maybe a little different about racing than most other sports and franchises. But ultimately, you know, we're excited for the future. You know, in IndyCar, I think it's bright. Even with Roger's age and everything else, you've got Greg who's ready to step up, and Greg is as good of a man as you'll find. And we're excited by that.
Yeah. Well, listen, let you get back to your vacation real quick. Tell us about the foundation that you're working on, the Graham and Ray Hall, the Graham and Courtney Ray Hall Foundation. I want to make sure we plug that as well, because I know you've got a lot of high hopes for that, and a little bit of Paul Newman influence there as well.
Yeah, so it was all Paul. It started with Paul. When he passed away in 08, September of 08, I decided to start the foundation in May of 09. And right now, our main focus is veterans and cancer research. So we support two primary causes. One is Soldier Strong. So we provide exoskeletons, VR technology, basically advanced technologies to injured, whether it be paralyzed, whether it be PTSD, treatments for veterans when they come back home. And then on the flip side of that is we work with Colorado State University and their OneCure, which is a cancer research group on dogs using comparative oncology to find a cure in humans. And so Courtney and I and all of our donors that support us, we are directly funding the Losartan trial, which is the first ever clinical trial of a cancer treatment found in dogs on humans, and it's on kids for bone cancer. So it used to be if kids got bone cancer, it was terminal illness. That's not the case anymore. And we're making a difference and we're moving the needle. We've had such good success at Denver Children's Hospital. They've added Atlanta Children's Hospital. Now we're looking for a third and fourth hospital to add this year. And so we're excited by that. And we, you know, that gives us a lot of pride to see that we're making a difference there.
Yeah. It's, that's very exciting to hear. I appreciate that a lot. And, you know, as you know, we have a little startup company over here, Bravago, our hard seltzer company. We've got some more products going to come out hopefully later this year, but we've been talking about it internally, trying to find a way once, you know, we got to grow the business and reinvest in the business, but we want to be able to start being able to participate. So I can definitely see a future where Bravago starts contributing to the foundation as well.
And that'd be awesome. Get more involved.
Like we'd love to do it. And if you talk to, you know, you talk to Tammy as well, that we work with over here, as soon as you mentioned dogs, she's like, give all my money over there. That's the first thing. She's like, where do I sign? Take my money.
Yeah, I know the dogs are cool. And the cancer treatments for them, like this Losartan thing was found in dogs, and it, they don't like to use the word cures osteosarcoma, but there were some dogs that, there's a lot of dogs that had bone cancer that was normally deadly, that nowadays have all four limbs and walking around, running around perfectly fine. So
dogs don't give a shit whether you use the word cure or not. They just want, they just need
the
help.
They just want to play.
They just want to play. They need the help. But what you guys are doing with the kids and the veterans and the animals, we love that. And by the way, listen, Goldberg's ranch in Texas, his wife Wanda has a nonprofit. She fosters animals. She's had, I don't know, there was like the neighbor had a giraffe and she's got a lemur. There's a kangaroo running around. There's goats. There's the fainting goats, which are hilarious, by the way.
Yeah, fainting goats are funny.
They are absolutely hilarious. And they got a thick skull, so don't think they get hurt. This is what happens to them. And they just got this condition, almost like narcolepsy. And you'll see them. She'll just video. They keep trotting along, running toward you, then just drop like a rock.
No, I know. It's funny. Yeah, for sure. It's funny to see them.
Yeah. I appreciate it. Are we missing anything else you want to throw out? Any other plugs we got to hit?
No, man. I think we're all good. So we look forward to seeing you out at Long Beach.
We'll see you out there in a couple weeks. Guys, check out the website, grahamrayhall.com. You can find everything you want, you know, all the businesses and the charities and the paint protection, the Cotti stores and everything that's going on. Everything that's going on over there is at grahamrayhall.com. Graham, thanks so much. I appreciate it. And we'll chat soon, my friend. I'll see you in a couple
weeks. No worries.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.